From West Virginia Public Broadcasting.
Support for the legislature today is provided by the following.
West Virginia University, online at wvu.edu.
AARP West Virginia, your ally for real possibilities in the Mountain State. Online at aarp.org/wv. The West Virginia Higher Education Policy Commission, working to double the degrees produced annually in our state by 2025. Through increased opportunities for West Virginians to earn the credentials today's economy demands. The High Technology Foundation, building a stronger West Virginia, online at wvhtf.org.
At the legislature today, a bill to allow anyone to carry a concealed weapon in West Virginia without a permit now makes its way to the governor's desk. But a Tomlin proposal to cut funding to public schools is no longer making its way through the legislative process. Members of the House clash once again over funding for the state public employee health insurance program, and we discuss the possibility for increased dollars to fund infrastructure coming up on the legislature today. Good evening, I'm Ashton Mara. A bill to remove the permitting and safety training requirements to carry a concealed weapon in West Virginia now heads to Governor Tomlin's desk after votes in the House and Senate today. The bill largely remains the same as approved by the Senate earlier this week, but as Rob Engel reports, delegates made a minor change this morning.
Members of the House took up the Senate amended version of the bill Wednesday. House Bill 4145 removes the permitting and safety training requirements to carry concealed for people over the age of 21, but leaves those provisions in place as an option for anyone who may want to get a license to carry in another state. The bill also creates a provisional license for 18 to 21 year olds.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move that the
In the Senate, increased penalties were a sticking point in the bill. Senators included three new felony counts, including felony charges for carrying a gun unlawfully or using a weapon while committing another crime. In the House, however, it was a tax credit for the permitting and safety training course that was the issue. Senators removed the original $100 tax credit included by the body, but Wednesday, House Majority Leader Darrell Coles moved to amend the Senate version.
We reinstate in part the tax credit, a $50 tax credit for persons to pay for training or offset their training cost, or the cost may be applied to their application fee as well. So, Mr. Speaker, therefore, I move we concur in the Senate amendment with further amendment.
Those in favor will vote aye. Those
the $50 tax credit was approved in the House and in the Senate.
More than a majority of those present having voted in the affirmative.
Senators ultimately voted to approve the amended bill, and now it heads to Governor Tomlin for a signature. But Tuesday, Tomlin said law enforcement officials were still concerned with a threat to public safety, and he was unsure whether he'd sign the legislation. He vetoed a similar bill during the 2015 session, citing the same concerns. But it only takes a simple majority to override a veto. For the legislature today, I'm Rob Engel at the Capitol.
Governor Tomlin has 5 days, not including Sunday, to consider the legislation, leaving members of the legislature more than a week in this session to override a veto. Senators on both sides of the aisle took a stand this morning, opposing a piece of legislation presented to lawmakers on behalf of Governor Tomlin. The bill would have cut funding to the state's public school system by nearly $15 million. But with layoffs across the state due to budget issues and declining enrollment, members of the Senate say now is not the time to cut county funding.
Senate Bill 452 would have recalculated the state's school aid funding formula, cutting dollars given to the state's public school system for the second time in a year. Tomlin announced a 1% reduction in funding in October. Members of the Senate Education Committee approved the bill Tuesday evening, but without recommending its passage by the full chamber. The bill was set to go to the Senate's Finance Committee for further discussion, but Senator John Unger moved Wednesday morning that the committee report be rejected, essentially killing the proposal.
This education committee coming out with no recommendation at all, to me, I think tells the story. And here's my concern, Mr. President. This balances the budget off the backs of our children. And the thing of it is, it cuts all of our county boards of education, some more than others. And our school system's already struggling in a lot of ways, and they're trying to keep up. I mean, the senator from Morgan, we worked on the special needs children, where they're being underfunded in those areas. And any other additional cuts like that only goes right into the bone.
Unger says he's also concerned with another provision in the bill. It would extend the amount of time a school bus can remain on the road before being replaced from the current 12 years to 15 years, saving the state about $4 million in 2017. Unger says that brings up safety concerns as well, but the West Virginia Department of Education says the change would bring the state in line with the national average of replacement cycles. A 2012 audit of the West Virginia Department of Education showed West Virginia ranked in the top 20 of states for the amount of dollars spent on each individual student per year, coming in at around $11,000 per student. But counties across the state have started cutting positions this year to deal with declining revenues. Cabell County was the latest, approving 61 layoffs and 97 transfers just Tuesday evening. Democratic Senator Bob Plymel represents the county. He voted against the bill in the Education Committee.
I know that we have some pretty tough times as it relates to the budget, but we're honestly trying to work in good faith to make sure that we get a budget that's passed that is good for the citizens of West Virginia.
This bill, he says, is not good for those citizens. Republican Senator Charles Trump made the motion in committee to move the bill without a recommendation for passage, but he says he, too, opposed the measure.
While I would never presume to speak for any other member of this body, I don't think there was a member of the committee, a single one, who thought that we should pass this bill.
Senate Finance Chair Mike Hall also sits on the Education Committee. He explained the committee's intent.
I understand there's been a newspaper article now in the northern part of the state claiming that whoever voted to do that was voting against their county, and that's absolutely not true. All they did was vote to send that bill to me, hoping that I would be responsible enough to not hurt my Putnam County was huge in this bill. So I saw that. You know, and I've been here a long time, and I would assume I might be trusted to at least maybe find one or two parts of this bill that we might be able to use. But no, I'm going to support the motions of the gentleman. But I want you to understand what they're doing. This was the governor's request, and his party is fighting him. We're trying to balance this budget. So we brought several things to this floor the governor proposed. And you know, so that's all, but I would say that, you know, to the public, that vote yesterday was not against your county. Whoever's listening, that vote was just simply to let me have the opportunity or the finance committee to at least look and see if there was some other revenue that we could safely garner. Remember, though, this is the only way you can touch the public ed line, which is $1.9 billion, is to do something like this. Everybody else's budget has been cut by the governor in his budget cutting the base. Higher ed's been cut. Public safety's been cut. DHHR's been cut. They've all been cut. You didn't vote on those.
The chamber voted 33-0 to reject the committee report, killing the governor's bill. The vote leaves a nearly $15 million hole in the state's 2017 budget that lawmakers will now need to find a way to fill. That figure is in addition to the $466 million shortfall Governor Tomlin's staff is already projecting for the fiscal year.
That projected shortfall is not just a concern for the Senate, of course. Members of the House will also have to agree to a plan that closes the budget gap. Today, the chamber's floor session largely focused on what that plan may look like for both the 2016 and 2017 fiscal years. Liz McCormick reports.
Governor Tomlin's budget officials say the state will end the fiscal year in June with a nearly $400 million budget gap. Today, members of the House voted on three bills to help agencies like the Department of Health and Human Resources and the Public Defender Service fund their programs through the end of the budget year. Delegate Eric Nelson of Kanawha County is the House Finance Chair.
These are some extra expenditures that have occurred in the fiscal year 16 that we need to fund right now. And we are pretty much come up to our the final outstanding items, and so from here forward we're looking to, if you will, narrow our remaining $25 million that we still have to fund for this year.
Lawmakers passed all three supplemental appropriations 98-0. On Tuesday, the Senate passed a bill that would increase the state's cigarette tax by a dollar. It also includes increases in tax rates for other tobacco products, including snuff and vaporized nicotine. The bill would put the tax increase in place in April, also helping to close that budget gap. The tobacco tax bill will soon land on delegates' desks, but many senators doubt it will be successful in that chamber. Nelson says that's not the case.
I expect to have that up and debating on this very soon. It's too early to say what that is. Obviously, their bill is at a dollar, which increased it from the governor's 45 cents. The projected revenue exceeds $100 million, and we'll just have to have the appropriate debate on that.
The tobacco tax will start in Nelson's Finance Committee. This year, the budget has caused more than a few debates on the House floor. Members of the Democratic Party have specifically criticized the majority for ignoring the need for additional funding for the public employees' health insurance program. Today, House Speaker Tim Armstead asked the members to understand that leadership is working to fix PEIA and that the funding for the program is contained within the 2017 budget bill, just as it always has been.
Let's quit the game playing. Let's quit trying to take every bill that comes through here, whether it actually would or not fund anything, and try to throw some amendment on and try to say there's no plan. This is a plan that needs to be developed as part of our overall budget, because this budget is what will fund PEIA and make sure that our citizens do not have draconian cuts that none of us, Republican or Democrat, want to see occur.
Minority Leader Tim Miley questioned Armstead's remarks and brought up the tobacco tax bill passed in the Senate on Tuesday.
We got a bill from the Senate that I think goes a long way, if not completely fixes the PEIA problem, but also, most importantly in my opinion, has a positive impact on the health of West Virginians. 25 senators in a bipartisan vote supported that. Senate President didn't. How committed is he to fixing PEIA? I hope the leadership of this House stands up, despite what the leadership of the Senate may have done, and says we are committed, and we're going to make those tough decisions, because we have to make them too.
The tobacco tax bill would have to be approved by the House by the final night of the session to bring in the dollars to aid the 2016 budget and budgets into the future. The 2017 budget will be finalized during a special budget session called by Governor Tomlin following the conclusion of the regular session. For the legislature today, I'm Liz McCormick in the House.
Liz McCormick also reports on a bill that would ban elective dismemberment abortions in the state. The bill was on the agenda in the House Judiciary Committee this morning.
Senate Bill 10, as approved in the Senate last week, would ban what are commonly referred to as dismemberment abortions, or dilation and evacuation abortions, D&E. The ban would not apply in cases of medical emergencies. D&E abortions could also be performed by the physician if the fetus is already dead. The bill was the subject of a public hearing Monday and passed through the House Health Committee last night before being taken up by the Judiciary Committee. Supporters of the bill say it's a common sense law, protecting an unborn fetus from being ripped apart when it's still alive, while those who oppose it say it disrupts the doctor-patient relationship and could put a mother's life at risk. Physicians have testified before lawmakers that the method is the safest option, but Delegate Joe Ellington, the House Health Committee Chair and a practicing OBGYN, says there are other procedures that can ensure the death of the fetus before D&E takes place, like injections to stop the heart. Under this bill, those procedures would still be allowed. Delegate Barbara Evans Fleshour is a Democrat from Monongalia County. She spoke against the bill.
This is an emotional topic, and I understand that we have differing views. But there's one thing we all took an oath to uphold, and that is the Constitution. And I don't think we have the right to pick and choose which parts of the Constitution we're going to obey.
After 2 hours of discussion, the House Judiciary Committee passed Senate Bill 10. It now goes to the House floor for consideration. For the legislature today, I'm Liz McCormick in the House.
With all of the budgetary concerns to fund basic programs and services, there's one funding issue that's getting lost in the mix. Lawmakers have yet to dedicate much time to discussing how to increase funding for the state's ailing roads and bridges. There are over 7,000 bridges in West Virginia, and the Division of Highways employs dozens of inspectors who closely monitor the condition of each. But what do those inspectors see when they go out into our communities? Beth Voorhees went on an inspection last fall to find out.
I-64 westbound just outside of St. Albans. Every bridge in West Virginia has a story to tell, and it's up to bridge inspectors to find out what that story is.
Fracture critical, if this falls or they get a fracture in it, then this whole span could come down. So these are inspected every 2 years.
Bridge inspector Don Burford and his teammate Harry O'Connor are giving this small bridge a careful once-over. They pick and prod at the girders, listening and looking to see what kind of condition it's in. Tracy Brown oversees bridge inspectors in District 1, a 5-county area. There are over 1,200 bridges in his district, 600 in Kanawha County alone. Brown says this bridge, taking traffic into St. Albans, was built sometime in the mid to late 1960s. And these inspectors are looking at the wear and tear it's received over the years.
The inspectors are looking for any kind of deficiency in the structure. You know, on one end of it, something that you definitely wouldn't want to see would be a fatigue crack in the steel, where the steel's opened up. They're looking for cracks in the welds. And then on the other side, they're looking for any delaminated concrete in the substructure units, the piers and abutments. Looking for cracks in the deck, things that wouldn't be safety concern, but there's still a deficiency in the bridge. They're looking for just any kind of deficiency, anything that would rate that bridge lower. And they take that information, that data from this inspection, and they compile an inspection report. They have to write a report when they get back to the office and then assign a condition code rating that the federal government outlines, you know, exactly defines what those are. And it will get an overall rating, and that will determine if it's structurally deficient or functionally obsolete, things like that. We treat each bridge we've got like our family's crossing, because somebody's family is crossing that bridge. And we take the safety of the public very, very seriously. That's what it's all about for us. That's why we exist. And we have found things, and if there is any question whatsoever, we close the bridge or we post a bridge. You know, all our bridges are safe. If they're not safe, we make them safe by posting or closing or replacing and things like that.
On December 15th, 1967, the Silver Bridge crossing the Ohio River at Point Pleasant collapsed as the bridge was full of vehicles at rush hour, killing 46 people. This accident is why bridges are now inspected on a regular basis. The I-bar chain suspension bridge was built in 1928. It was a defect in a single I-bar that brought the bridge down. The tragedy led to the Federal Bridge Inspection Program to take a scheduled view of the nation's bridges. The state pays for the inspections, but the federal government reimburses 80% of the cost. For all of the talk about this nation's crumbling infrastructure, Jimmy Reston, the chief engineer with the West Virginia Department of Transportation, stands behind the condition of all of the state's bridges and the workers who maintain them.
West Virginia's bridges are in excellent shape. We monitor them as best we can. The statistics are what they are. The terms structurally deficient, functionally obsolete, a little bit misleading. That's a formula term. Functionally obsolete usually means that it's under width a little bit for the roadway. Structurally deficient would mean maybe it's posted for a certain weight limit. But those bridges are inspected annually. They're monitored, they're evaluated. The posting is kept up to date. We always are working very hard to eliminate posted bridges in the state. It seems like we'll gain a little bit and then we'll lose a little bit. So it's just that way.
As for this two-lane bridge crossing Interstate 64 in St. Albans, it looks a little rusty and weathered and could use a new coat of paint, but it's going to be replaced. This section of Interstate is going to be expanded to three lanes soon. A new bridge will be built to cross it using upgraded construction materials and design. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Beth Voorhees.
The state often relies on federal dollars to aid in funding the highway system, but there are still things lawmakers can do to increase those dollars at the state level. Joining me to discuss a proposal he's attempted this legislative session to aid in the funding of infrastructure is Delegate Mick Bates. He's a Democrat from Raleigh County. Delegate, thank you so much for being here.
It's good to be with you.
We should say that we invited Senator Ed Gonch from Kanawha County to join us tonight, but the Senate went back in for an evening floor session, so he was not able to be here. But let's talk about a bill that you attempted to get through the session this year, House Bill 4570. That came out of a negotiation with the workers' compensation debt.
Yeah, some discussions that we had over the summer about looking to try to find a sustainable long-term solution to our road problem. And as you're aware, that one of the successes we've had in West Virginia over the course of the last 10 years is to fix our workers' compensation problem by creating a steady funding stream. So over the summer, we looked at that as potentially being a source of being able to continue those revenues. One of the best taxes to pay are taxes you're already paying because you don't miss them because you're already paying them. So we looked at that. Unfortunately, the hard times the state's fallen upon, that money was being redirected into 2016 budget, 2017 budget. So we dialed that back and then began to look at the severance money as a way of being able to put, initially we looked at $247 million, that was then scaled back to $100 million. And then last week in committee, we attempted to amend the governor's bill to put about $50 million into roads. And all those things, unfortunately, haven't gone anywhere.
So remind me, what was the governor's bill that you attempted to amend?
The governor's bill did two things, which is redirect money to the 2016 budget. It took the workers' compensation debt payments and then brought them back to general revenue. And at the end of June, it essentially eliminated the tax, the additional severance tax, on coal, natural gas, oil, natural gas, and timber. And we asked that, that those taxes continue as a funding stream for roads.
So we, like we said, that bill is not moving forward. But now you all are looking to a Senate bill. It was a bill that actually Senator Gonch has proposed. It hasn't moved in the Senate yet, but that bill takes into account some of the recommendations from the governor's Blue Ribbon Commission on Highways.
Yeah, well, roads are something that I think everyone hears about from home, and we're actively looking at ways to be able to address this issue and any vehicle we can, no pun intended, to try to advance a long-term funding stream for infrastructure in West Virginia. So the Senator's plan builds on the Blue Ribbon Report, creates a revenue stream of about $200 million that would be dedicated to roads, various fees and some additional funding on diesel and some other things. So there are 22 senators that have signed onto that, and we hope that the Senate will take that up, send it to the House, and we can work from there.
Yeah, can you give me a few examples of where that funding would come from that's contained in the Senate bill?
Okay, there's people don't like to talk about fees, but there's some DMV increases. There's additional surcharge on diesel fuel. There's an adjustment on the privilege tax of purchasing a car. So it moves it from a net transaction to a gross transaction. It actually takes the rate from 5% to 4%, but it would be subject to tax on the total price, not the difference between your trade and your new car. So those various things, about 15, 16 items that all combined together get you about $200 million.
So this bill is still in the Senate?
Yes, with single reference to the Senate. And there's 22 senators. So there's enough votes in the Senate to pass the bill. We hope they take the bill up, pass the bill, send it to us, and see if we can do something with it.
But is the House considering anything else?
There's been a lot of discussion about a lot of different things, as you're aware, but Rose hasn't been one of them. So I would perhaps take that back. There's been some conversation, but there's been no serious discussion about establishing a funding mechanism to fix our roads, build our infrastructure moving forward.
Now, you didn't mention this, but I don't want it to seem like we're just blaming the Republican majority for this, because we have a Democratic governor who didn't put forward any proposals to fund roads either.
In preparation for this evening, I went back and read the governor's State of the State address, and I actually looked for the word roads, and with all due respect to the governor, there was no mention of roads. And for me, roads is jobs. One of the things we need to remember about West Virginia right now is our economy's challenged. So investing in West Virginia puts people to work. When we put people to work, what that does is build our economy and build our infrastructure. So, I think it's roads are jobs. And the proposal that I've seen, the calculations on that $200 million, would put 3,000 West Virginians to work today. And we could use 3,000 jobs right now in West Virginia.
Okay. Delegate Nick Bates from Raleigh County, thank you so much for joining us.
Pleasure to be with you. Thank you.
This has been The Legislature Today. I'm Ashton Mara. Thanks for joining us.
Support for the legislature today is provided by the following.
West Virginia University, online at wvu.edu. AARP West Virginia, your ally for real possibilities in the Mountain State. Online at aarp.org/wv. The West Virginia Higher Education Policy Commission, working to double the degrees produced annually in our state by 2025. Through increased opportunities for West Virginians to earn the credentials today's economy demands. The High Technology Foundation, building a stronger West Virginia, online at wvhtf.org. From West Virginia Public Broadcasting.